Welcome to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. Get ready to embrace the fearless mindset and revolutionize your dentistry practice. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon. And it's a pleasure for me today to welcome Dr. Megan McCoy. And she is associated with my favorite university on the universe. That's Kansas State University. Go Wildcats, right, Megan?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I discovered her through a connection with my family, my stepson, Ryan, who is a financial planner. And I was visiting with Ryan and asking him, Ryan, I know in the dental industry, I absolutely know that there are some dentists that get themselves in trouble financially and they need counseling. They don't necessarily need a dental consultant. They don't need an accountant. They need someone to help talk them through how to become more financially responsible. And so Ryan, being associated with Kansas State himself in helping them with their business and economics and financial planning components over there in the school, suggested Dr. Megan McCoy. So, Megan, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the Fearless Dentistry Podcast today.
Love it. I've never been associated with responsibility, but I will do my best.
You know, the word responsibility kind of bites us all at times, doesn't it? We really like to think that maybe we are responsible individuals, but when we pause periodically during the day, you know, my wife says, John, don't be stupid now. So she's very sweet and gentle about it, but the message is plain and clear. So, Megan, the thing that in our onboarding conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago that I really liked that you talked about, a couple of things. One of them was financial therapy. And, you know, when we hear the word therapy, we automatically think of psychological therapy, psychiatric therapy, psychiatric counseling, whatever. But financial therapy, I thought that was interesting. I want to come back to that in a minute. But your undergraduate degree is in psychology. And refresh my memory, where did you get your undergraduate from?
Yep, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Okay, very good. And then you found Kansas State University and you got your PhD in family therapy.
Actually, from Georgia. I did my PhD in Georgia.
Oh, well, shoot. I was trying to give Kansas State a little more benefit here. So, okay, University of Georgia, your PhD in family therapy. And then you made it up to Kansas State University, and you're on staff there on faculty. Share with us your what your position is there at Kansas State.
Yep, I'm actually an assistant professor, meaning my in the current role of being a tenure track in the financial planning department. So now we're teaching courses in there, but mostly focused around financial well-being, love and money, finding meaning in our financial well-being. So that's
right. Okay, financial planning, love of money. That's interesting.
Nope. Love and money, not love of money.
Okay.
How I love it, life.
Love and money. Okay. Yeah. Describe that to us.
Yep. So I explore how we were taught by our parents about money, where the values, the roles, the rules around money, how that shapes our dynamics with our partners for good or for bad, because we know money is often cited as one of the number one reasons for divorce. And then I talk to the college students about how they want to teach their children one day about money. What values do they want them to encompass? And so it's a really fun class around financial communication and conflict resolution and dreaming about how can money be used to make us more well overall.
Right. So I think it's interesting because, you know, often we do hear about struggles within marriages or couples. Absolutely. And one of the main struggles is around money. And it's almost kind of like, didn't you guys talk before you got married or became a couple?
Probably not. I actually did research and about 87% of people don't talk to anyone about money a year. An entire year can go by and they don't talk to anybody, including their partner, about money.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. 85% can go a full year without talking about money with their partner.
Or anybody in their life.
Or anybody in their life. That is interesting. I would never guess that.
I know.
No wonder there's some major conflict with finances. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and speaking about dentists and dentistry, share with us how you can take what you're teaching with love and money into the box of dentistry, dental practice, dental marriages. Talk with us about that.
Absolutely. Well, I think everybody probably needs some more skills and in communicating about money in a more positive way and not being always a scarcity mindset or not always being about like our partner spending too much or too little or things like that. So I think looking at what are the characteristics that improve our financial like health and our relationships in light of those financial health is helpful to everyone. I think dentists also have a unique experience because your jobs require so much standing, so much bending, so much physical activity that retirement ends up often being necessitated not by choice, but by physical pain. And so there's financial conversations around making sure insurance is taken care of, that you are supportive, that if physically as a dentist, your body needs a little break or a little time off. But also, if you do end up retiring early, how are you going to make that retiring fulfilling? How are you going to switch from your working days being focused on dentistry and then your commutes filled with podcasts about dentistry to creating a new identity in retirement that's fulfilling? In addition, I think many dentists who own their own practice have the experience of blurred line between work and home. You probably encourage like kids to work with you or your partner to help with you. And that line between work and home gets very difficult, whether family members have a formal or informal role at home. So I think financial therapy can aid with trying to figure out work-life balance and trying to create those boundaries between home and work.
You know, as you were speaking, I was listening to you, I promise. But I was still, the 85% was just ruminating in my mind. Why do you think that 85% of people in a year never visit with someone else, particularly a partner or spouse, about finances? Where does that come from?
I think there's three main sources. The first is that money was often a taboo. Like we were told explicitly, it's rude to talk about money. The other day I was visiting with my sister-in-law and brother, and they jokingly were talking about how, oh, your Aunt Megan is a hotshot at work. She's doing so good. And my niece goes, oh yeah, how much she make? And her mom was immediately like, you don't ask that question, right? And if you think that, many of us have memories of, don't ask that, that's rude. I remember when my dad, I needed to fill out my FAFSA for college, and I asked my dad, how much money do you make? And he's like, I'll write it in. He's going to explicitly give me that number. So there's these overt and covert ways our parents have talked to us about not talking about money or is somehow rude. I think another reason is a gross feeling occurs when we realize we have more or less than others. Something like 75% of Americans say they're middle class when middle class is really much closer to 30%. That's because all of us don't like that feeling of having more or less than others, so we tend to avoid it. And I think the third reason specifically around relationships is that money fights are qualitatively different than other types of fights. We've seen studies that show that people curse more when they're fighting about money, that money fights last longer, that they tend to spill over in other areas because there is a finite pie that has to be divided when it comes to money. So if you're fighting about who's taking out the trash, that's an infinite amount of times we get to take out the trash, infinite ways we could play with it, infinite ways we can problem solve. But when you're talking about a finite pool of income and a finite pool of outgoing expenses, how you divide that up becomes much more critical and time bound. And so money fights are so difficult that people tend to avoid money in total, so they avoid the money fight.
I'm making notes as you're speaking here, Megan. Money fights. I imagine that they cause probably more friction in marriages and in relationships than any other topic, would you guess, other than,
absolutely,
you know, spousal infidelity or whatever.
But which is often linked to financial infidelity. It costs money to have an affair. So
yeah.
it still comes down to money.
You know, it is. It's really interesting how the dollar sign sits right smack dab in the middle of the universe, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I heard once a quote that money is the object in which we project our deepest fears, hopes, and dreams upon.
Yeah.
And so money becomes the center because those dreams, hopes, and fears are the center of our existence.
Yeah. The one thing that you spoke earlier that, you know, our parents and, you know, I'm just a trifle older than you are. And I know that in my family, my mother and father, my father, he did all the money. Mm-hmm. He took care of the checkbook and, you know, he knew the investments and whatever. And my mother and father were the traditional marriage. My mother was a housewife. I'm going to say a house manager, and their relationship and their marriage worked, but I don't think that they talked about money much other than my dad, you know, would indicate, and they both knew how much was brought in, and they knew that their financial freedom and their ability to spend was limited and tight budget with four children. I would think that today's script for couples would be more transparent than my parents or your parents. Is that the trend, Megan?
I hope so. What we did know is that during COVID, conversations around money increased, that people's taboo around money dialogue really went down during COVID, that there was a new openness that came. I think when it comes to marriages, they do tend to be a little bit more egalitarian and flexible. But I think at the end of the day, what we see is that men still tend to make more than their partners, that in high-income families, men still take on much more of the financial management role. That's different in low-income families where women are more likely to, because if you have money, being the decider or the financial decision maker is a powerful role. If you're in a low-income family, it is a chore. It's a responsibility. It's a task, right? And so what we find is that more wealth men tend to have power in decision-making, and lower wealth women tend to take on that role.
Yeah.
But I think the gender dynamics is interesting. In healthy marriages, what we know is that there tends to be one driver of the finances, meaning it's really hard for two people to manage bills. Like somebody has to execute it, right? And so there tends to be, and in those healthy marriages, there's decision-making done overtly between the partners. Like, this is why I'm going to take care of the money. Maybe I'm better at it. Maybe I have more time. Maybe I enjoy it more. But this is why. But there's still conversation ongoing about when they need to make shifts in decision-making, when they need to make shifts in how they spend between partners, and both partners feel like they have power and control in those decisions, you know, if they're not the ones who are actually managing money.
I think also, you know, part of it would be that for men, it's kind of a masculine thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm the main breadwinner, therefore I should be the one managing the finances to a degree. I would guess that has an impact. I think that the roles in that situation are gently shifting. Is that your experience, Megan?
Yep. In metropolitan areas, especially in cities, what we're finding is that women are decreasing the wealth gap to the point where women in their 20s and 30s, so before they take time off to care for children or elder care, they are making more than men. So there is a shifting dynamic that's not been true in any prior generation.
Yeah.
We still kind of see a U-shaped relationship between women's income and men's satisfaction or well-being. Whereas when women don't make, if their partner doesn't make any money, men are distressed, probably because they don't have enough income coming in for the household. And they get happier and happier as the wife makes more money until 40%. Okay. At 40%, men are the happiest. If you make about half of what I make, you're bringing in money, but I still get to be the breadwinner. I still get to rely on you more in the household duties and things like that. And then as soon as you get more than 40%, so as the wife makes 50, 60, 70, 80, there's stress and anxiety or distress in the relationship goes back up. So it's really interesting, that balancing act of like egalitarianism, roles, balance, and sense of identity.
Let's segue back in to how what we're talking about, the dynamics of what we're talking about, funnels in, and let's jump into the box of dentistry.
Yes.
Let's throw some meat out at our audience and share with them, Megan, about financial therapy and how that might come into play for a successful practice. Mm-hmm. And then also how that may come into play for a doctor that is struggling with the finances of the office and Absolutely. And home.
Absolutely. I think let's start with distress and end on a higher note. So if you are struggling to get a financial foot in your dentistry practice, financial therapy can really help some of the anxiety you're feeling, the stress you're feeling, processing that and creating a plan. So what we know in research is that financial anxiety is persistent worry about our finances, whether there are actual numbers wrong or not. Like even if you are doing okay financially speaking on paper, you may still be experiencing financial anxiety. And financial therapists are trained to both help you create a plan so that you have a financial plan in place that can help you reach your goals and decrease the stress you're experiencing, make sure you're paying things off correctly and things like that, but also attend to the emotional coping skills that may be required at different stages of your dentistry practice's trajectory. You know, if you are feeling financially stressed or anxious, seeing someone and processing that and differentiating what you need to make a plan for and change and what you need to have faith in, what you need to relax about, what you may need to do coping-wise can be really powerful. And that's how financial therapists can help when in a face of distress. Also, we know that financial stress, if you're experiencing that because of your practice, kind of spills over to your work home functioning, meaning if you're experiencing financial stress, you're more likely to have emotional distress, which leads to more conflict with your partner, which leads to a decrease in parenting ability because you're distracted by your conflict with your partner, you're distracted by your emotional well-being, you're distracted by the financial stress. And I think financial therapy can help navigate those relational issues going on and provide better communication skills and potentially provide you and your partner better ways of supporting each other under stress, which is valuable.
Yeah. I know that in dentistry, like the other businesses, with the economic impact of the pandemic, that there was and still is the residual. There's a lot of the dental professionals that are still trying to climb out of the impact of that. You know, it wasn't just a 1 year, 2 year, it was almost a 3 year scenario to where it hit them hard. And, you know, the financial distress leads definitely to emotional distress. And, you know, seeking financial therapy is, I just know that that is not something that a lot of them think about. Yeah. And they wonder, what can I do? You know, they reach out to the dental consultant community, and their aim is more at gaining patients and charging fees and looking at your collection and production per hour and those type of things, which is necessary to look at. But I don't think it hits the real core element of what's going on. Do you, Megan?
Yeah. You know, I just realized that I don't think we've defined what financial therapy or who financial therapists are. That would be good to just briefly say, I'm sorry. That financial therapy did start at Kansas State during the Great Recession, 2008. Financial planners and therapists realized that their clients were talking about the intersection of money and well-being, and so they started working together. Then we started programs at K-State, now at Georgia and Texas Tech and Creighton, where we train mental health professionals to understand finances better. And here at K-State, what we specifically do is train financial professionals, counseling-like skills, so that they can better address their clients' financial needs as well as their emotional needs. So a financial therapist could be a financial practitioner or a mental health practitioner who looks at that intersection between well-being. If your listeners are located in Kansas, we have an extraordinary amount of amazing, but there's financial therapists across the country.
How does one find a financial therapist, Megan? Do we just go to Google and say financial therapist?
So there's actually a website called the financialtherapyassociation.org, and they have a find a financial therapist option on it. You're also welcome to contact the Financial Therapy Association's admin. I believe that that's listed on the website as well. But that admin will also send out notifications if someone's looking for a referral in a certain state for you to find someone near you. I think those are the main things. The other one is if it's more based on your relational or mental health issues, a great source is psychologytoday.com. You can put your zip code in and look at look at mental health professionals who specializes in financial stress, relationship communication, depression, anxiety, substance use, all the ways that we cope with the stress, and they may be able to help you even if they're not a financial therapist.
Yeah. We'll put all of these links at the end of our podcast notes today, Megan, so that they can refer to them and find them. Because when I was speaking with Ryan, my question was, what's the best way and who is the best persons to reach out in this particular scenario? Mm. And he mentioned financial therapist. And so for me, you know, I retired a little over 2 years ago. And so, you know, I do have some miles underneath my wheels, and I've never heard of financial therapy. Financial planner, yes. Financial advisor, yes. Financial therapist, no. Concept yeah. had never crossed my mind nor my computer. So again, I think having helpful ways for the audience to find individuals. And again, it's one of those things that sometimes, people are not willing to share and their vulnerability. Absolutely. And expose themselves to people like this. How do you, Megan, if someone were to connect with you, how would you approach them? What would you ask them? What would you want to know that so that you could evaluate where they're at and how you could help them?
Yeah. So I think when I was working full-time as a therapist, I often started with what's called a money genogram. And that's exploring the family tree in a way and how patterns of money came together. Were there strong beliefs like money's the root of evil? Was there strong beliefs that money should be created to protect others in our family or money should be grown so they can make the world a better place? What are those messages and how are you living aligned or disaligned with how you grew up around money and what you think is important? I think finding ways to see money as a source of letting you be congruent is a powerful way to reframe money. It's not about acquiring the Scrooge McDuck amount of coins in your attic that you swim in, but rather a vehicle in which you can live to your greatest possibility. Like my financial planning coworkers won't like this, but when my husband and I go on date nights, we often get a Powerball ticket and we sit down together and we talk about if we won the lottery, what would we spend our days doing? What passion would be spending more time with? Who would we be spending more time on? What would we be doing less of? And it's a vehicle to say, are we living who we want to be? What is holding us back? Are there ways to use our resources to get one step closer to that person we want to be? What is getting our way? It is such a great conversation about what we value, what we're not getting enough of, what we need more of, and things like that. So I think thinking of money through not the millions of dollars, but what it lets you do, what it buys you in terms of time and energy is what it should be.
That's a great approach for that 85%.
Yeah. Yeah. Over a nice glass of wine, talking about how you would spend time on the beach together. And then once you got tired of the beach, you would get to see art because you wish you had more time to explore art or go eat exotic foods because sometimes you feel like your diet's being so boring lately. And those can be done in some kind of form without having millions of dollars. Maybe it's, okay, we decided that food was something missing in our lives. Let's create meal plans and cook together 3 nights a week. You know what I mean? So you can use this conversation about what you do in billions of dollars to make small changes today.
Yeah. You know, it goes back to a question that I think is really important for people to look at times. And I kind of think frequently, you know, what you were doing with your husband is that you were sitting down and having a great dream vision board moments. And basically what you were asking without limitations was, what if?
Yeah.
And then you answer the question and fill it out. Oftentimes, though, those what ifs don't happen. Some of them fall off your what if board. Some stay on and you put others on. But you're constantly shifting and reevaluating your priorities. And it helps you sync yourself more as an individual. But then if you agree as a couple, it really syncs and pulls together the couple.
Yeah. There's actually a study that shows that financial planners were accidentally making their clients' marriages better because it was creating sessions for the client to talk about goals, about what's important to them. And so by going to see a financial planner, these clients were experiencing alleviated financial stress and also relational happiness as an outcome. So,
yeah. Well, see, one of the reasons I, again, thought that it would be a good idea to bring you on is because in the profession, and I think in anybody's life, what they are and who they are and how they view things at work cannot be different at home. It has to be the same thing. And too often, I believe that a lot of people look at, say, you know, I can leave and I can be this person at work and then I can be this person at home. And so how they view the world through their eyes as far as money at work and how they view the world and money, the attitude towards money, which you shared a minute ago, at home can be very different. But I think it is interesting how we view and look at money and the value of it and what it has to do in our life is definitely framed as by our parents as when we grow up.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I never thought about the idea that if you're an entrepreneur, how much your spending behaviors align, your risk tolerance levels align to your own personal decision-making at home. I think you're absolutely right. The only thing that makes me curious is that there's this area of behavioral finance called mental accounting that we treat different pools of money differently, right? So like our paycheck feels different than like when grandma used to send that birthday check to us, you know, like we treat that birthday check differently. Or when I was a young person and I got my income tax refund, right? Like that was for something fun, right? Not responsibility. I'm better now.
Right.
So we do this mental accounting, which sometimes works out for us and sometimes doesn't. But I wonder how that idea of pulling from different accounts matters to entrepreneurs running.
Well, you know, it's just, I'm not a simpleton, but again, that 85% just keeps resonating. And when we go off the episode today, I'm going to have to give that a little bit of thought because that number shocks me. I guess it, part of me, when I sit back and look at it, I'm going, you know, unfortunately, probably a lot of relationships are dysfunctional and they're dysfunctional to the point that they don't trust talking with the other individual in their life. Absolutely. Is that a big part of it, Megan?
Yeah. You know, something I should have mentioned earlier when we were talking about changing trends in couples dynamics is we also have a lot more couples choosing to have separate accounts rather than pooled accounts.
That's right.
And that literature is very interesting too. Like for instance, pooled accounts, you tend to buy less what they call hedonistic purchases. You're less likely to buy that frappe from Starbucks if your partner is going to see that purchase. And so there's less wasteful spending in pooled accounts. But I wonder if separate accounts allows people to have separate financial lives and reduces the need for conversations. I do know we did a follow-up study around that lack of communication, found that married couples were least likely to talk about money. Perhaps like everything's already been decided. And so everything's on like auto pay and auto bill. And so you avoid the conversation until you're like, you're spending too much. And it comes to a head, you know? But then the rest of the time, everything else is on autopilot. I'm not sure.
Now, I find that interesting. Married couples are least likely to talk about finances versus
dating or engaged or single.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I would never have guessed that one either.
Yeah. So we were thinking our hypothesis, we need to do further studies, but our hypothesis is if you're dating, then who's paying for dinner needs to be negotiated. So you're more likely to have a conversation like, I need you to pay for dinner this week. When as you're married, if you do have pooled accounts, it doesn't matter who pulls out the credit card. You don't even have a conversation about it. It's just assumed to be coming together. Maybe.
Well, it seems to me that any relationship, you know, the foundation of it and the strength of it really comes from their ability to just communicate openly and be transparent with each other.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that there's an undertow of not wanting to be transparent because the trust factors are less today than they have been in the past. And I think that's slowly a cultural thing that we're experiencing now. And I think from within the last couple of years, 2 to 3 years with the pandemic and the political nature of everything, that it's becoming magnified more. And part of my concern and worry about that, Megan, is will we ever trend the other way where we feel like we can be more transparent and we can trust people? We hear be transparent. I mean, that word is thrown out there a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't believe it. I don't believe the people that are throwing that out there really mean it. Am I thinking wrong?
You know, I don't know. It's so interesting studying relationships because, you know, we often cite 50% of marriages get in divorce. But that stat is actually very flawed because do you measure from the year that everybody got married? So measure from like 1983, or do you measure just the divorces in this year? Like, how do you measure this 50%? So the number's flawed. But what's fascinating is if you dig in further, what we see is that age matters. If you get married too young, then you have a higher chance of divorce. But also if you get married way later in life, there's a chance of divorce because you're less likely to fully integrate lives. You're more likely to live more like independently because you've gotten used to having your own accounts. You're used to independence. We also know divorce rates go much higher in subsequent marriages. So your first marriage is going to have a way higher chance than your seventh marriage. We also know that kids are stressor in marriage. So in certain developmental parts of the child's life, divorce rates go up high. But for the vast majority of marriages, their first-time marriages, they have a very, very, very good success outcome and have been getting better and better since divorce rate peaked in the 90s, you know? So I feel like relationships tend to be a little better than in the past. But I think it's probably a rubber band history of like, got better, got worse, and just keep on going back and forth.
Well, it's like anything else. It takes a lot of work, takes a lot of dedication and commitment to the concept and to the other person.
Yes.
And
a curiosity about who that person is, because none of us are stuck in stone. So who your partner is today is going to be different than 3 years down the road. And being curious about who they are, I think that keeps marriages
too. Yes. Very interesting thoughts and ideas here today, Megan. Let's bring this home here. I like the financial therapy concept. I really like that. I want to make sure, and that's the reason I brought this on, was for give dentists that may be struggling and or may not be struggling, but just want a healthier financial situation in their life, is and to look up financial therapy. And it allows you the opportunity to visit someone independently without judgment as to where you are and gain a better understanding as to why you are where you are based upon your decisions financially and what you can do to make changes. And then to allow yourself the moment and the time with someone else, a kind of a vision dream partner, your therapist, to share with them what your dreams are and what you, where you see your vision, your life 5 years, 10 years down the road, and how they can help you get there. Mm-hmm. And this is part of, which I think is a really, it's alluded to with dental consulting, but I don't think it's really approached in an in-depth, meaningful way where the people can walk away and say, hey, I really have a program here now. I understand who I am, and I feel like I've really shared openly and been very transparent with this person. Therefore, I've been able to grow through my issues, and I've grown through them with myself and with my partner, and here we go.
I love it. Yes. Talk to someone this year about money. That's the takeaway.
that's a takeaway. Okay. This final quarter, we just entered the final quarter of 2023. So find someone to talk with about your financial situation and allow yourself to dream. And if you're distressed or stressed, either one, find yourself a good therapist and don't look at financial therapy or getting a hold of a financial therapist as a weakness. That's one thing that I try to impart with people when we go for help. Don't look at it as a weakness. I look at it as a real strength, Megan, because they become aware of themselves and their situation, and they've come to the point where they know that they need help outside of themselves or their partner, and they've taken the time and the courage to go out and seek someone and say, "Here I am, help me." And that's what financial therapy is about.
Absolutely love that. Yeah, I always equate it like, I just wish like the second there is like growth possibility or stress in our lives, we went to get help. It'd be like us going to get an oil change instead of waiting for our car to go on fire. Like, right. Let's get help early.
As I say, go at it and be proactive rather than set yourself up to where you have to be reactive.
Oh, I love that. Love that. Excellent.
How does that sound? Perfect. Well, Megan, I appreciate you being on with me today. Again, I think we've thrown some nice pearls out there for our listeners. I encourage them to give us some feedback. They can, at the end of the episode notes, there will be an email that they can send to me, and I'll relay them to you, Megan. Excellent. I will also put all of your contact information on there if they want to get with you directly and dig in with your expertise in financial therapy. And I got to end it with go Wildcats.
Go Wildcats. I love it.
Thank you. This is the end of the episode with Dr. Megan McCoy, and I'm your host, Dr. John.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more fearless conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.